Gospel according to St. John, the second chapter. On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. When the wine gave out, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what concern is that to you and to me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Do whatever he tells you." Now standing there were six stone water jars for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. Jesus said to them, "Fill the jars with water." And they filled them up to the brim. He said to them, "Now draw some out and take it to the chief steward." So they took it. When the steward tasted the water that had become wine and did not know where it came from, though the servants who had drawn the water knew, the steward called the bridegroom and said to him, "Everyone serves the good wine first and then the inferior wine after the guests have become drunk, but you have kept the good wine until now." Jesus did this, the first of his signs, in Cana of Galilee, and revealed his glory, and his disciples believed in him. The Gospel of the Lord. As much fun as it would be to talk about why you want to invite Jesus to your next party, we're actually going to shift to the second lesson from 1 Corinthians. Starting today and for the next 8 weeks, we are going to do a sermon series on various texts throughout 1 and 2 Corinthians. If you take a look at the New Testament and the different books in the New Testament, there are various types of writings among those books. The first four, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, are known as the Gospels and tell the story of Jesus and his ministry here on earth. You then have the book of Acts, which is a bit more of an historical account of what happens to the disciples and the church after Jesus ascends into heaven, and is written by the same author as the one who writes the Gospel of Luke. And so it's a continuation of the story. At the very end of the New Testament, you have the book of Revelation, which is an apocalyptic book, which really shows where the world is heading in God's hands as a way to inspire faith and strength in believers who are living now. In between, you have a whole gathering of books that are called epistles or letters, because they're letters, usually of an author sent to a particular community, church, or to an individual, like you have, say, in 1 and 2 Timothy. When you look at Corinthians, what you have are a collection of two letters. There probably were more, but at some point they must have gotten lost in history. And these two letters are written by a man named Paul, the Apostle Paul, to the Christians in the city of Corinth. And so what we're looking at are letters written by Paul to the Christians in that city. The Corinthian church was a church in conflict. Now, you probably have never experienced a church in conflict. You probably have never heard about a church in conflict in the present age, but back in that day, they had churches that were in conflict. And there was a whole mess of things going on in that church. It starts with the fact that the believers in the church, they were each aligning up after different leaders that they had. I belong to this person, or I belong to that person, or I belong to Paul. And Paul just finally says, "I'm glad I didn't baptize any of you." What else is going on in that church is that you see stepsons who are marrying their stepmothers. you see people who have disagreements with others in the church, and they're not settling in house the way that Jesus had asked Christians to settle problems. Instead, they're going to the courts and they're suing each other to settle problems that could have been handled inside the church. There's also this issue related to spiritual gifts. And the belief by some in the Corinthian church that the spiritual gifts that they had made them superior to the others in the church. Spiritual gifts run the gamut. It could be a person who speaks in tongues, who interprets the tongues. You don't see that happen in Lutheran traditions as demonstrative as we get sometimes as we nod our heads if we agree with something the preacher is saying during the sermon. You have people who have the spiritual gifts of leadership, of administration, of caring for the sick, of visiting those who are homebound and those who are imprisoned. Across the board, there are spiritual gifts. The problem is there are some who believed that their spiritual gift of speaking in tongues made them superior to others in the church. And what Paul will do just after this section of 1 Corinthians that you heard read today is he will lead us into that wonderful text about love, being patient and kind and never arrogant or boastful or rude, to show that the community is not well served by this belief in superiority, but is better served by mutual love for one another, which leads to the common good, as we hear in the text for today. And so as we explore the letters to Corinthians, one of the things that it puts in front of us is this human tendency to believe that we are superior to others. It's not unique to the world outside of the church. It's also common among those who are within the church. And we are challenged to look at this need that we have to believe that we are superior to other people. There are so many teachings that can lead us to draw that conclusion. There is this thing called nationalism, which leads us to believe that a certain country is superior to other countries, and that superiority makes them dominant all over all other countries. The problem with the way that nationalism can play out in a nation is it narrowly defines the country, even more narrowly defines who belongs to the country, and even more narrowly makes the people who are the right kind of people in the country look a lot like me. That's the risk of nationalism. One way of looking at oneself as superior. Classism is another way that we can try to establish ourselves as superior over others. And I have to admit, this is probably my biggest challenge whenever I look at my need to be superior. And I was telling the congregation at the early service, you know, I can go to a restaurant, and if I'm looking at someone who has eating habits that I think are lesser than they should be, I can feel smug at that moment and say, you know what, why are they using a spoon instead of a fork right now? So classism plays out as another way of establishing superiority over others. Racism is one of those ways that superiority plays out in our lives with one another. It's determining that a person of a certain race is considered inferior because of that race and violating that person's integrity because of their race. It can play out in relation to gender as well, assuming that because a person is a certain gender, that we can violate their integrity and diminish them and see them as inferior. If you really want to get a handle on where your own feelings of superiority are, pay attention to the things you complain about the most. Because usually what we complain about are those things that we feel that we are better than others at. Now, people in the church can be even more dangerous in their superiority than the people outside of the church. And the reason for that is that we put God behind our motives. We claim that God is telling us to believe this. God is telling us to say this. God is commanding us to act in this way. That we put a divine mandate on this sinful, broken way of existing in the world. What Paul does in Corinthians, which is masterful, is he addresses that superiority with the story of Jesus. He addresses it with the story of Jesus who was crucified. That is, a Jesus who dies and tells the reader that just as Jesus dies, so too do we. And everything we hold on to, everything we believe that sets us apart or makes us special or superior, it dies with us. Then Paul says, and this Jesus who died is also the Jesus who has been raised from the dead. And as Jesus has been raised from the dead, we too will be raised from the dead as a new person. The language appears in 2 Corinthians more specifically and more clearly. Paul says we move from being an old creation into being a new creation. That one with Christ, one with Jesus, we die to our old self and we rise to being a new creation. God is doing that work in our lives. As new creations, it doesn't mean that we will immediately get it right all the time. It does mean that we are willing to struggle with this battle between wanting to go back to the old way of living and living into the new way that God has created us to be. And that's where Christian life is lived out, in this struggle. Let me give you three stories on how this struggle plays out. There's a man who was walking in a jungle one day, and as he was going through the jungle, he came across a fox that had no legs. It simply laid there on the ground. But the fox looked healthy and strong, and he couldn't figure out how that was possible until he heard noise coming through the jungle, and then this large tiger came in, and the tiger obviously had just caught its morning food, and the tiger went over to the fox, laid down, took part of his morning catch, and gave it to the fox, who then had something to eat, and that's what sustained that fox. The tiger then ate the rest. Well, this man, he looked at how God had provided for that fox and said, I want to be just like that fox. And so he found a place in the jungle and he sat there and he curled up and he waited for someone to come and to do something for him, to bring him food. And he waited and he waited and he got hungrier and he got weaker. And just when he was at his lowest point, he says, God, why aren't you providing for me? And the Lord said, I gave you legs. Go find something to eat. We are called to discern whether we are people in need or people who are to care for those in need. And there are some times when we are people in need. and we must rely on others to be kind and good to us. But there are other times where we are called to be the ones who care for those who are in need. We get them mixed up sometimes. And our struggle to be a new creation is to struggle to discern which one we are at what times. The second story is of a church that had a church secretary for 30 years. And finally, she decided to retire, and the church celebrated with the secretary and then brought in a new secretary. And immediately, all the office volunteers started to complain about the new secretary. I know it doesn't happen in churches that people complain, but pretend it does in this case, all right? And they complained about her. They said, she wants a new computer. We just got her a new one 10 years ago. What's wrong with it? And they said, and she doesn't use those rubber fingers when she's sorting through paper like the old secretary uses. She doesn't even order them anymore. And they just went on and on about the new secretary. They started going to the retired secretary and complaining about her to the retired secretary. And finally, the retired secretary reached her limit with this. And this is what she did. She knew that every Thursday after the office volunteers helped get the Sunday bulletin together, they would go out and eat. So she invited the new secretary to go out for lunch, and they went to lunch at the place where the office volunteers were eating. And they walked in together, and the office volunteers went, they actually like each other. And then the retired secretary went up with the woman who had replaced her to those eating lunch and said, you really have an outstanding new secretary. I am glad that you are loving her and supporting her and encouraging her. And at that moment, they learned they could love both. They didn't have to choose. They could love the old and love the new together. In our struggle, too many times we think we have to choose between one person or another as the one that we follow and listen to and whose opinions we treasure. We don't have to choose between people. The third story is told by the author of the book Dog Whistle Politics, a white man who was doing work in Africa, and as he was traveling one evening, his car broke down between towns. He started to walk, the sun started to set, he started to become frightened, and then this pickup truck pulls up, and the truck pulls aside and says, can I give you a ride? And he looks and there's a white man in the truck and said, yeah, I'm heading to this town. Can you give me a ride? And the driver says, well, I'm actually heading to the town before where you're going, but I can take you as far as that town. He thanked him. They rode together. They had a great type of conversation. He saw how intelligent the driver was. He kept treasuring how generous this driver was for picking him up and driving to his destination. And they got to the town where the driver said he was going to stop, and he goes, you know what, I'll take you the rest of the way, even though it's about another 15 miles out of my way. And so he drove, but then they got to just the outside of the town where they were headed, and he stopped. He said, I need to let you out here, because it's not good for me to go into that town. You see, they're hunting for me because I killed a black man because I didn't like him. And the author says, at that moment, I realized that even good people can have racist approach to understanding life. That's also part of our struggle, is to acknowledge there is a brokenness within each one of us that can lead us to draw conclusions about others that are rooted on nothing else than our biases against who they are. We are all God's creation, and we struggle with living into what it means to be that good creation. But God gives us the Spirit to guide us and direct us in that time of discernment. And God's mercy is upon us on those moments that we fail. Because we believe in a God who died as we die, who raises us from the dead, gives us a new way to live this life. Amen.